I've worked at as a state health commissioner now for about 5.5 years, and so I'm speaking officially on behalf of ASTHO, but I've worked for 10 years within NACHO as a local health commissioner. And by the way, I'm ending my 25 years of governmental work this week and moving to the university level, where I'll be following the very highly acclaimed leadership of Dr. Hortensia Amaro and the work that she's done at Northeastern University on the very issues I think that we'll be talking about around health equity. I'm Dr. Amaro. So I'm going to quickly move through illustrating for you what has been done recently. Last year, Elena organized a conference where we looked at this issue, and this year we were really going to focus on what's changed. We want to see not simply that these issues are spoken of as important, but what's different, what's changed in the last, in particular, year. And so I'm going to skip over the definition and really focus on a few things that I think have made a very big difference in the recent time period. The first is very clear leadership. And ASTHO, which is the Association of State and Territorial Health Officers, so representing the 58 states and territories in the country, has made it very clear that as an organization, this is a top priority for us, not just in words, but in deeds. These questions are asked of each of our members, as new people come in, but also among the people who are working year in, year out. And ASTHO has developed a very specific and concrete component of its strategic plan, which it has just gone through a process of updating with even more detailed, specific explanations for what does it mean for a state health department to embrace health equity. What should those expectations do? And there are wonderful examples throughout the country. I notice I'm joined today by Commissioner David Lakey from Texas, a colleague who in Texas is working on this issue in the same way that we in Massachusetts and other states around the country are. But the leadership from ASTHO matters a lot. Reaffirming that leadership and updating as was done in the last year makes a difference. These are very difficult time periods. States don't have a lot of money. Locals don't have a lot of money. Territories don't have money. So part of what we need to do is give people examples of what they can do as governmental public health without those resources. And there are many examples of these that are increasingly occurring in states. There are special reports where the states develop pull out the data that highlight the disparities that exist and make the public aware of them, policymakers aware of them, and highlight where those disparities specifically exist and where the attention needs to be paid. These, Vermont and Utah, are examples here. Other states are taking that, though, those data, and then developing report cards where they actually will highlight where they think they're doing okay and where they're not, in order to bring a specific focus to their work. So again, these are critical areas of work that every state and local and territory can do, even in times when there are layoffs and cutbacks. We see this in our territories as well. Guam is undertaking a health disparities initiative that is worth noting under difficult circumstances, but where it's looking at where the subpopulations are and where to target the resources. Now, most of you are most familiar when we talk about health disparities with these kind of charts that show that there are specific illnesses where there are inequities with regard to the presence of disease, injury, or premature death. But increasingly we are supporting and seeing states using much more sophisticated approaches, and Dr. Koh referred to this. So this just, for example, shows you how inadequate it would be to stop at the level of looking at Asian Americans when we do, in just this one slide as an example, a sub-analysis of looking at the Cambodian Vietnamese population in Massachusetts with regard to smoking. We see it is much, much higher than that is for the other Asian populations. If we left it at Asian, we wouldn't see that and therefore know where to target our resources. We're also increasingly using new data sources, and here I would highlight the work of Dr. Tish Davis, who I see in the audience, who has demonstrated that there are many sources of data we need to draw on, and states are increasingly doing so with regard to occupational health, for example, which take us out of the comfort zone of public health but allow us to look at aspects of the conditions of lives, and we need to be familiar with them. These are the most common jobs from the census, broken down by race, and there are health risks associated with each of those kind of jobs. We need to be familiar with this kind of data. Other data that we are having, that we are incorporating increasingly into our planning, is a result of the progress that's being made with the Affordable Care Act and the move to health information technology and meaningful usage. And so we're looking at the ways that we can incorporate that new important data in the planning and response of public health communities. So when clinicians see peaks in terms of or increases in terms of certain chronic diseases that may be concentrated in small areas of a community, public health people can use that data to target their resources. And, of course, we're continuing to emphasize the importance of looking at root causes and to speak openly and frankly where racism and discrimination needs to be addressed as a component of the work of state, local, and territorial health departments in order to make sure that we are getting at the root of many of these issues. We have seen more and more in the states that there is that people are data dependent. They're looking at what should guide our work, and that while race and ethnicity is at the center of the picture when we look at health equity, it is insufficient to stop at looking at race and ethnicity when the data indicate to us serious patterns of health disparities. So I would just highlight, for example, many states have noted, as this slide indicates, that there are other populations. For example, we have noted in our own sub-analysis that when we look at people with disabilities, they have additional health disparities across a wide range of different health arenas, independent of the specific disparity they have, and that therefore we need to think of the people with serious disabilities as people who, for whom attention is needed as we think about health equity. The same is true for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender populations. When we see those patterns, we need to look for the patterns and make sure we're thinking of health equity broadly defined. Let me offer some, again, relatively easy things that health departments are doing and can do. First, internally, an example, here's an example from Ingham County, where the health department is doing internally equity and social justice workshops for its staff and the community. NACHO has developed a wonderful online tool, Roots of Inequality. I'd encourage you to Google it. It offers training for public health personnel, which is can be very valuable and useful in terms of ensuring that staff is knowledgeable about the issues involved. We can change our policies. Those are relatively cheap. Here's an example. We can write into our contracts, as more and more states are doing, that there have to be indicators of efforts around health equity. These include things such as diverse boards of the agencies that we're founding, leadership of those agencies that reflect the race and ethnicity and other characteristics of the communities they serve, etc. This can be part of a contract. It's legal to do that, and when that happens, it changes the way that communities respond. Ohio is an example of that, where they've written into their health their contracts with agencies these kind of requirements, and they track them over the years and are able to see whether or not the agencies are in fact addressing health equities appropriately. In Massachusetts, we developed a specialized flu vaccine for everyone tool guide, because we noted that the disparities that Dr. Koh was noting existed earlier with regard to vaccination among specific groups needed attention, and people needed to know what were some specific approaches that would work in terms of reaching the populations that historically had not been vaccinated, and these were disproportionately immigrant and refugee groups. And then there are just lots of wonderful examples of targeted campaigns. When you're going to do a targeted campaign, we always say, look who's disproportionately affected by the issue. Target, target, target. These are specific campaigns in Boston. People are using tools like the Unnatural Causes, already existed, to have community meetings around the country and talk about how the issues raised in that film, by the way, which stars Adewale Troutman, to apply to their own local conditions. North Carolina has adapted on their website, prostate cancer screening video for black men that specifically does this kind of targeting. And I'd highlight what Montana has done under the leadership of the first Native American health commissioner in the country. She has developed, when she was developing tobacco control materials for Native Americans, recognized the need to develop very specific and different tobacco control materials for each one of the different tribal groups, using culture and language and imagery to target those subpopulations. So again, an example of using expertise to understand who needs to be reached and how to go about doing it. But there are things that are not cheap, and they're not easy to do, but important to do, and those are changing the conditions in the communities. And here the goal, I think, is health in all policy and addressing the conditions that exist in communities which lead to the disparities that exist. This is just one example of where we know that within the communities affected by disparities, we are more likely to see conditions that lead to poorer health. There are some initiatives worth highlighting that the federal government is doing to try to address these conditions. And here I would highlight the outstanding work that's been done with the community transformation grants that were an important component of the Affordable Care Act. These community transformation grants allow counties and states and local communities to begin to alter the conditions that contribute to disparities by thinking outside of the box, thinking about doing such things as changing the zoning incentives so that you can encouragement for stores that sell fresh fruits and vegetables to locate in lower income communities so that communities can pay attention to transportation planning at the local and the state level in ways that incorporate walking and biking and not simply cars. We brought in town planners into the public health arena to talk about how the way communities can be designed, schools can be placed, sidewalks can be built, so that it actually is possible to help to overcome some of the barriers that people have to achieving health equity. In Maryland, they have developed health enterprise zones recently, and this involves legislation that is specifically focused on improving health, but it puts resources into those communities in a way to try to change the conditions and make the easier, more natural behavior the one that will lead to improved health. Alaska, too, is doing excellent work that needs to be highlighted. And then I would finally get to healthcare reform. Whether or not you have access to healthcare has a direct impact on whether or not you're able to begin to address the disparities that exist. This chart just clearly shows that the yellow line represents the percentage of the population in the country. The blue line represents the percentage, or the blue bar represents the percentage that has insurance, and you see those that lack insurance, I should say, and that the people of color are much more likely to be uninsured. In Massachusetts, what we found out was if you have insurance, you get preventive as well as clinical care. This showed us what happened after health care reform. The higher bars showed us that the 98% of the population that had insurance, that three-quarters of them saw a clinician within the last year for preventive health care. This is almost public health-oriented health care. Within the last year, 98% of the insured were able to see some clinician and get that services. The 2% of the population uninsured, they're reflected in the lower bars, and there you see only about a third of the 2% were able to see a clinician for preventive or public health work. We know that it's not because they didn't need it. We know it's because they couldn't afford it, and we know that because we've seen indicators that they are, in fact, at greater risk of illness. And there are now efforts to change payment reform and to come up with creative ways of moving away from fee-for-service to global payment with value-based rather than volume-based care. If we move towards that model, which allows greater flexibility in terms of how accountable care organizations and other providers design care in order to promote wellness, it may allow for provision of care in ways that help to close disparities. For example, incorporating as routine and covered by reimbursement the use of community health workers who are able to work both inside clinical settings, but very importantly outside of those settings, reaching populations who are more likely to have disparities but will benefit from someone reflecting their own language and culture who can come to them and bring them into care when needed. And I'll close just again by saying, in making these changes at the state, local, and territorial level, leadership, leadership, leadership makes a difference. It makes a difference in terms of who's holding the positions, but it really makes a difference in terms of national organizations. And I can't say enough about the leadership that ASLO has provided in order to say this has to be a top priority in deeds as well as words. ASLO is doing an outstanding job. It's highlighting four new state and territorial health officials and the employees of those organizations, and working very closely with NACHO, who shares these beliefs that we need to do more, we can do more, and even in tough economic times, that's not an excuse for not actively addressing these issues. Thanks.